back to my garden, episode 72.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
What's the hottest trend in gardening? I think the hottest trend is aquaponics. Can you really grow a massive garden powered by fish? Find out more and discover the secrets to building your own fish-powered garden at www.backtomygarden.com/fish. Attention, garden lovers. Do you want to save time, save money, and have your most unbelievable garden ever? Receive free tips, amazing strategies, and gardening techniques from gardeners around the world. Join the VIP club for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/VIP. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to another fantastic episode of Back to My Garden. Sensational guest for you today, folks. Kate is a garden writer and a blogger and a lecturer. She hosts a radio show for people who love vegetable gardening. We're going to talk a lot about that. It's called the Master Gardener Hour. That's on Saturday mornings. And Kate gets to garden and play in the sand and clay around New Jersey. But you may notice it's not quite a New Jersey accent. We're going to talk about that as well. So please welcome the host of Kate's Garden Journal and a whole bunch of other good internet stuff, Kate Copsey. Hi, Kate.
Good morning. Yes, how are we doing over your way? It's beautiful to be with you.
I'm excited that you're here.
Well, thank you. Yes.
I've given you a brief introduction, and I want to hear your stories, and I know our listeners want to get to know you better as well. Kate, take a minute, take a deep breath, 2-3 minutes. Share with us a little bit about your background and how did you get into gardening?
Well, I think my first garden experience in the middle of England, my father at the time said he set my two brothers on painting the house around the windows and things like that. He sent my sister, who was a horse rider, round to do the stables. And he said, you can do the roses. So he showed me how to prune a rose, down to a couple and which ones faced out and which buds faced in and all that. And then he watched me do another one, and then he let me loose on, it felt like another 3,000 roses, but I think there was only another 25. And so that was my first introduction to pruning and gardening. And then when I got married, we moved over to the States, and I think we started in Buffalo, New York, and I really didn't get into gardening, though, until probably we had kids, and that was maybe around 20 years ago now. And I started growing different vegetables and shrubs and perennials and roses, and found that, particularly with herbs, that not too many people knew what to do with them. And that kind of startled me because I, you know, herbs being perennial, you know, you need to divide them every now and then. And I would chop them down, and I would take kind of a bucket round the neighborhood. Does anybody want any fresh herbs? What do you do with them? You know, to me, that was a natural. And I realized at that point that maybe American housewives didn't quite use the fresh things that in England we used to. I mean, everybody had sage for sage and onion stuffing. They had thyme and they had mints. And so that was my first introduction, I think, to the difference between the two cultures. But having been here now for 30 years, you know, I think America has generally caught up, shall we say. Everybody in this last 10 years, they all want fresh vegetables. Everybody's got an appreciation for fresh vegetables, for herbs and seasonings. And it's so much more exciting now. And then, as you mentioned, I did a radio show about growing veggies for 5 years, and having basically done everything from Olympic swimmers to space people to teachers to permaculture, I decided I'd run the gamut with that, and it needed a fresh host. So I have now shifted to the Master Gardener Hour, which encompasses the rest of the garden as well as the vegetable garden. So that's great fun. And we'd started that, I think it was the first week in October. So that's still, no, sorry, the first week in November. So that's a very, very new show for me and great fun.
Wow, this is going to be a great show. I can't wait. I've already taken 6 paragraphs of notes. Speaking of notes, for those of you driving in your car, please don't try to jot down anything on your iPhones. I'm going to have all of Kate's links and resources up on the blog at Back to My Garden. You can follow Kate on Twitter at Katie Copsey, that's KatyCopsey. You can also check out her writing at katecopsey.com and her blog at katesgardenjournal.com. Let's start with your radio show, because it's new. You're still finding your legs. Is there a way for a listener to listen to your Master Gardener radio show on the internet?
Well, actually, most people listen to these on the net. They can find it on, and they can listen to it live, obviously, although I record it. It's on the same station. It's americaswebradio.com. And on Saturday morning, you click on the programs, and Saturday it will come up as the Master Gardener Hour. That will give you the archives. Usually the Saturday program is archived on Monday or Tuesday, depending on the workload and who's there. And that will give you everyone that's been there beforehand. You can also put that in on iTunes and Stitches, and you should get them. Whether they've actually archived them at this point on those, I don't know. I haven't actually tried that. I usually go to the station. You can also just listen live on a Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. And you'll hear us pretty much live. So, and the first 3 weeks we did fall gardening, daffodils, and now we're into the seasonal gift shows. So we're doing 4 different shows on different sorts of gifts for gardeners, which is great. I did this last year, and some of the great things that are out there for gardeners as gifts, either on your list or to put on your list. So it's always great fun.
Here you are with an internet and live radio show. You're reaching all over the world. You've come a long way from the neighborhood lady with the herbs in the bucket.
Oh, yes, yes. I think, as I said, that, you know, the appreciation for lots of different things in the garden now. So, you know, I think, although I, you know, the awareness now has, obviously, I just happen to be in the right place at the right time, I think. And as you've probably gathered by now, I can talk the hind legs off a donkey. So whether it's in a microphone or on a stage or to a neighbor, you know, I can talk to anybody.
I explained this to some of my American friends, that the English are a century ahead of the rest of us when it comes to gardening. I mean, you have taken gardening, it is like the fourth national sport of England. I mean, you do it at a level that no one in the world can do. You were telling me you know about one of the best kept secrets in Birmingham.
Oh, yes. They have a beautiful botanic garden, and I don't think many people really go there. And at the time that I went, it would be about maybe 6 or 7 years since I last visited it. And it's a good hike from the station, New Street Station, which is one of the main stations there. People go to New Street to go down to London and up to Manchester, but nobody gets off and actually goes to a botanic garden, which is what I did. And it's quite a good walk. I think there's a bus as well. But it's just in one of the little neighbourhoods. And at the time, it had 4 different gardens that were different period gardens. There was one that was a Roman garden, which had a nice mosaic on it. Then there was the Renaissance garden, and then there was the High Renaissance, and then there was a modern garden. So it was just kind of a nice little part of that. And I love garden history. And that's another really undereducated part. There are so many people now that are interested in garden history, and there's no teaching. on it. I only know one course in garden history, true garden history, that's around. So that's something that we're hoping to change, or I'm hoping to change. But anyway, in this garden, I mean, and it's got beautifully landscaped areas, and it's right bang smack within sort of a 20-minute walk from downtown Birmingham. And of course, people think of Birmingham as being industrial, and they think of it as being black and grimy and very dense urban. And then you've got this beautiful little oasis in there that's just landscape gardens and taken care of by the, I think it's National Trust. Beautiful area, well worth finding.
And now you find yourself in New Jersey and you're adding your own splash of color. I wanted to ask your opinion on something. You have the very focused flower people and they love their flowers. You started on roses. Then you've got the vegetable gardeners. Is it almost like herbs is a meeting point? You know, they smell good, they're colorful, and yet they can be used in cooking. Is herbs like the middle point between the flower fanatics and the vegetable people?
If you're really into hostas or daylilies or daffodils, probably not. But I think for the rest of us, maybe it is. You know, vegetables are on the one side, but I think it really depends on... I used to say actually when I was giving talks to herb people, and this was to herb people as against a general audience because I am a little timid, and I used to say, you know, a herb person, because the herbs go the whole gamut from fungi all the way up through annuals and perennials to shrubs to trees almost. We really have a very broad range, but if you've got some herbs in the garden, you know, you'll take a toddler over to the garden and you'll encourage them to pick a leaf off and to smell it, to rub their hands on something and to smell it or to taste it. And you wouldn't, a true rosarian wouldn't do that. You know, these things are to be looked at. You don't dare take a toddler over to touch it and rip the blossom off it just so they can smell it and look at the leaves. You know, they don't do that. Hosta people don't do that either. That was unique, I think, to herb people. But I think vegetable people probably do the same thing too. You know, you'll pick up a baby carrot and dust it off and hand it to a toddler to see what was under the ground, and potatoes and things like that. So there is a meeting to some extent.
You made me laugh because my wife does that to me. I'm the toddler in the story. She has a purple one called Anise, and the bees just love it. It's like flowers, this purple flower, and it smells amazing, but the bees just are attracted to it.
Well, that is an issue. But a lot of herbs are actually done or used, it's the leaf that they're grown for rather mm-hmm. than the flower part, although there are obviously exceptions. Hyssop, for instance, has a beautiful blue flower, which the bees like just as much as anything else. I think there's a certain amount of moderation. You have to be a little careful with toddlers. But as I say, most of them, quite often you'll use the leaf part of it. And when you've got a toddler and there are leaves and no flowers, the bees aren't interested in it particularly. So I think it's quite safe.
I know the listeners are wanting me to ask you this, Kate. You're an avid writer and a blogger and a lecturer. You're very busy in the gardening world. Did you get a chance to garden yourself this year, and what was it like?
Oh, yes. Mainly I do veggie garden in raised beds, but I've also put in a cottage garden, which I think a lot of people like the idea of a cottage garden. To me, it's not so much the colours, which are the epitome of a cottage garden, for instance. It's more the plants, the old-fashioned plants, things like cleomes and those self-seeding menaces that just go running abandoned. They self-seed and by next year they'll look much better. So that's been my garden this year. I started it last year with a few shrubs, and the vegetables have been the big part, big focus of this year, because we only moved here 18 months ago. So, you know, it's been kind of, it's been interesting. shall we say, raised beds and things like that. But we also are in a wooded area. So I had to clear out some of the really overgrown vine-covered wooded parts so I could actually get enough sunshine. Because, as you know, vegetables need a lot of sunshine. And there was just no way. There was no space or anything at the start. So, you know, that's one of the key points. You need to have good drainage and good sun. So a raised bed in full sun is probably the minimum that you need for a decent vegetable garden.
I'm nodding my head. We've been in our house 3 summers, and we've moved the raised beds 3 times. Because what's sunny in May is not sunny in September. I totally understand what you're saying. I'm interested in your cottage garden. Did that bring you a lot of joy?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I think almost any part of the garden is fun to be in. And of course, the vegetables need the pollinators. So, you know, you need to have flowers around too. And so that nice little combination of the two. But I think that there's nothing more wonderful than, I think, halfway through spring when you see things germinate like peas or something, and then at the same time you get this little mass of little seedlings in the cottage garden too. So you've got all these things going on, particularly in spring, and you're seeing all these things come up. That to me is probably the nicest part of gardening in general. It's the tasting and viewing of everything, particularly, say, in spring. But the garden itself, the vegetable garden, eating those the fresh peas, and then there's the fresh tomatoes, and there's the blueberries and lettuce. And you can just go out and you can just pick them. I don't even go into the kitchen. You know, the strawberries, just pick one up and pop it in your mouth. You know, to heck with all this special stuff to wash your vegetables. That's only because they've been contaminated with God knows what in transit. You know, just pick it out of the garden and eat it. Is one of the beauties of growing something yourself, whether it be a whole garden full or whether it just be one plant, just being able to see it grow and enjoy the really 1 minute old, blessed by the sun, tomato or strawberry. It's just wonderful.
In New Jersey, well, I'll back up. On the news in the United States last summer, all you saw were these stories of the harsh conditions and the drought. What was the summer like in New Jersey? What was the growing season like for you?
Shorter, from what I can gather, than normal. Most of the problems that people had emanated from a winter that wouldn't go away.
Yeah, that's true.
And once you got through winter, spring went on forever. You know, officially, our last frost date was, I think, May 15th. But frankly, although we didn't get a frost from the beginning of May, neither did we get 70 degrees. So, you know, basil and tomatoes and peppers, they want that what I call the swimsuit weather. And I don't know about you, but I'm not about to put a swimsuit on at 72 degrees, even if the sun is out. That's just a little too cold for me. And that's the same with the basils and the peppers. Now, for something like the green beans, that actually works okay. You can fudge green beans. You know, they'll grow at 50 degrees. And particularly the scarlet ones, I found those prefer the slightly cooler temperatures. They'll grow quite happily at 70, upper 70s, even low 80s. But once you get past that, they tend to take a break. And then when you get to fall, they came back again. But this year, I didn't think it was that particularly brilliant. We had fair bit of rain over the year. We didn't have a drought, which is a blessing, but neither did we get 95 to 100 degrees, and we didn't get a lot of humidity either. So that to me was great. But I was having scarlet runner beans all the way through the summer. My peppers didn't do very well. The tomatoes, because I say, although the frost date was the middle of May, I didn't put the tomatoes out until June. I just didn't feel the soil temperature was warm enough. So I had a few in containers that did a little better. But yeah, it was a different type of summer.
I totally understand. Last year, it was the winter that wouldn't quit. I mean, there was college kids that started a drinking game. Anytime they heard the word polar vortex, you had to take a drink. So if you're playing the home game, have a shot of libation. I'll say polar vortex a second time. And yeah, I mean, my tomatoes had cold toes into the middle of June. It was, and then all that rain. We got a lot of leaf spot, you know, the brown. Just it wouldn't stop raining every day in June. And then, yeah, I guess that's part of the unique challenges. Every season is different, right?
Yes. But then again, here we are in December. And yesterday we got our first bit of snow. It was only a drizzle. But really, I think I was still getting tomatoes well into October, which again was, you know, that was quite unusual, I think. You know, things didn't die as they normally do. We didn't get a frost till, I mean, see, it had to be. Probably a true frost. It must have been the end of October, which was a good couple of weeks after normal. I mean, my Asian vegetables, they went first, but the tomatoes, they hung on well into the end of October. And you know, by then you're thinking, they're looking ragged. You don't need a frost to tell you, actually, that the garden is over its best. You know, you get a little tired. It looks tired. The tomatoes weren't producing as much. The squashes, although they weren't dying, weren't being pollinated quite enough. So you'd get the flowers out, and then you'd get sort of two-thirds of a zucchini or squash starting to develop, and then it would wimp out at the end. That's a sign of lack of true pollination. So that type of thing was just showing, and really I should have ripped a lot of things out before I did, but I like to keep it green for as long as possible.
You know, Kate, we have a lot of container gardeners that listen to this, and raised bed gardeners. I have raised beds. I wanted your opinion, or maybe some insight. When do you like to add nutrition to your soil? Do you do it in the fall? Do you do it in the spring? Do you use compost? Do you have a strategy?
Well, I put chopped leaves on. We've got a lot of trees around, as I mentioned. Rather than raking up all the leaves and sticking them by the side of the road or in bags to be collected, I just wander around with the lawnmower and chop them all up finely, and then cart those over to the vegetable bed. That's kind of a winter mulch, because a lot of the perennial ones, like the blueberries and the asparagus, I wanted to give them that extra bit of coverage. So that was kind of, and then that will obviously go down into the soil. So that's kind of the fall stuff. And then in spring, I will put more compost on. I do find that raised beds, particularly if you've used compost, they compact, or they reduce in height. So I will probably get another couple of yards of true compost, bulk compost, and put that on just to raise the beds up again. So, you know, you do a little bit in the spring, some in the fall as well.
Hmm. I'm envious, because all the trees in my neighborhood all have a red, an orange spray-painted dot on the trunk, and the city came around. And this disease, ash boring beetle, has killed all the trees in my little village.
Oh.
It just, I don't know, it has happened in the last season and a half, so they're all getting taken out. So we've bought some mushroom compost, and I guess I'm starting to believe now you cannot overfeed your soil. It's like 90% of the game is giving it the nutrition to grow the vegetables.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you do put too much on, they tend to go a little quickly. But I think overall, so long as it's well decomposed. I mean, you don't want horse manure that's fresh. So it's got to be well decomposed. And you know what? I did a lot of over the winter because I'd got certain areas where I knew my raised beds were going to be. I was taking the kitchen scraps and just throwing them into those raised beds and then covered them over with the compost in the spring. So that was almost like sort of doing, you put them in a compost pile. Well, the compost pile then decomposes and goes on to the veggie bed. Well, I kind of skipped that step of the compost pile. I put them straight in the veggie bed, covered them and let them decompose in situ, kind of skipping a step there. And it did mean that I did get some potatoes and tomatoes where I weren't expecting them. But overall, it worked. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Surprise. Let's take a minute to thank our sponsors and then come back and play five quick questions. Are you concerned about toxic chemicals, GMOs, and frankenfood? Don't panic. Grow organic. Discover my new resource for organic gardeners. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/myorganic. Discover how to earn your first $500 as a new garden blogger. Get my simple five-step system for creating your own second income doing what you love part-time. Download instantly for free my garden blogger blueprint at www.backtomygarden.com/secret. You know, Kate, I just glanced at the clock. Our time is rapidly going by, and now's the time in the show where we play a game called Five Quick Questions. This is your chance to share your wisdom and experience with brand new novice gardeners. Are you ready?
Okay.
Are you ready to play?
Okay.
Okay. Question number one. What do you think stops most people who don't garden from gardening? What is it they're afraid of?
I think that there are people are so busy. So I think there's a time factor. The people don't think they've got time to do it. They don't think they've got a space to do it. You know, they think that, you know, when I was growing herbs, people would say, well, I don't want to buy that herb right now because I haven't got a herb garden. Excuse me, a herb is a plant. It doesn't need its own garden. It's only convention that has made us think that you have to have a herb garden and that the herbs can only go there, you know, and vegetables can only go in the vegetable garden. And you don't need to till up or even have a big vegetable garden to grow vegetables. You can do it. And I got this year a little bag of mix and put a couple of crosses in the top and stuck two tomato plants. You know, you don't need a garden to do it. And I think that's the second thing. They think they haven't got space. They think they don't have time. And they think that they have got either a black thumb or they need some special knowledge. You know, just go buy a plant, stick it in some dirt in a bag or a pot, water it, give it some sunshine and go for it. You know, 90% of the time, it'll work. You know, get over it. Just do it.
That leads perfectly into question number two. Now, you've had a lot of experience and you've had some interesting teachers. What's the best gardening advice that you've ever received?
That one's a tough one. And I know you told me these before, and that one I have been racking my brains because there are so many teachers out there. And I think probably the Master Gardener, when I first took a Master Gardener course, that was probably the most valuable education I had. And I know there's a lot of people out there that think otherwise, but the biggest thing it teaches you is you know where to go and find the answers. And it just shows, it teaches you that you don't know all the answers, but you can get away with some real basic knowledge and knowing where to find the rest of it. So just putting a plant into a pot or a bag of soil, that will work. And that's the basic knowledge. And then, but if you really want to know how to grow tomatoes and what's going to affect them, the right nutrients, you know, go for it. You know, there is all that information out there. But so that was the value of that course, I think, that you know where to go and find things, which certainly helps, but you don't need it to do basic gardening.
Fantastic. Perfect segue into number three. Websites. So I want everyone listening, head over to the web and follow Kate. Go to katesgardenjournal.com and katecopsey.com. Can you recommend one or two favorite websites for gardeners, maybe a resource site or a blog you read?
I think that if you go to any of the major seed companies, things like Johnny's and Burpee and Stark and things like that, they all have garden information. And I think those are a much better way than putting into the browser how to grow a whatever, because those will bring you up with the generic sites that are written by folks that aren't professional garden people. And it was explained to me once that, you know, you just go out and you find a couple of articles and you can put an article together. Well, that doesn't work. And a lot of those sites tend to be very generic, and the people haven't been there, done that. Whereas if you go to some of the big seed companies, they're vested in not just you buying their seed, but you being successful so that you come back. So they actually have some great gardening advice on them. If you're into organic gardening and things like that, there are a couple of sites, and the name escapes me right now, but there are a couple. And of course, your extension agent, if you're in the US anyway. They will always give you some good, solid advice. The other thing is, if you're going into a browser, put .edu at the end of it so that you get an education site. So you get solid knowledge, not just a rehash of what's out over the net. And I'll tell you one of the ones that you know, all this about growing herbs in the winter on a windowsill, you know? You've got to have a really good sunny windowsill and excess light, because otherwise they ain't going to be happy, kid. And yet, how many times do you read that on the internet? Growing herbs inside, you know, just stick them on a windowsill. It don't work. There isn't enough daylight. There's not enough day length for most of them to be happy. They won't die, but most of them won't be happy. And yet all those are just rehashed and rehashed and rehashed. And that actually, have you figured out that bugs me?
Good advice. Head over to the seed sites like Johnny's, Stark, and Burpee. A cautionary note, listeners. Going to seed sites may lead to buying of seeds. That's one of the reasons we have 22 kinds of heirloom tomatoes in our garden. One member of our family, the head purchaser, she can't say no. And I reap all the benefits. I get to eat all the tomatoes, so it's a great upside. And now I've developed an addiction to hot peppers, so we have like 7 kinds of peppers next season.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Actually, my peppers didn't do too well. A part of it was the summer, but also I made a classic beginner's error, which, you know, scratch it down to, oops, didn't think. I put my tomatoes on one side, and then I had the peppers on the other side, and they were all seedlings, and the tomatoes grew bigger than the peppers, and they were on the sun side, so the tomatoes were in the shade, the peppers were in the shade. Oops.
Strategic planning, yeah.
Yes, I just got the sun totally in the wrong direction, obviously, and yeah, I blew it. So, you know, sometimes just rushing out in the spring, you do these things.
Question number 4, can you recommend a favorite gardening book to our listeners?
I think if you're in most of the US, Nikki Jabor did a great book called The Year-Round Gardener, and she is in Nova Scotia, so it's a beautiful picture on the front of her in the middle of snow, so she is in the snow belt, she's not in one of these sort of warm areas, but she gives you guidelines as to how to grow, and particularly for fall. We all know about when to start in spring, how many weeks before the first frost, last frost, so you're going to sow things. But she tells you when to start your fall vegetables. And many of those are June, July, before when you're starting them, so that they're big enough to go produce in October, November, December. So that I think is a tremendous book. Dee Nash also did a very nice beginner's type book called the 20-somethings or 30-somethings garden book. And that tells you, takes the scary out of it for people, young people that are new to gardening. So that one was also an excellent book. And Katie Elson Peters did a beginner's gardening book, and that also was everything, covered everything in the garden, from lawns to bulbs to vegetables. A few vegetables, it wasn't a vegetable specific one though.
Wow, very good. Just a plug for Nikki. I phoned in and emailed Nikki's radio show on Facebook because I was having blue jays decimating my sunflowers. And she said, get a roll of duct tape and some old landscape fabric and cover the heads. And I managed to salvage about a third of my crop before the blue jays destroyed them. So I'm always very grateful to Nikki. I'm glad you mentioned her book. It's I have her new one, too. It's very good. And Dee Nash,
yes, good. The food gardens one. Was it 101 food gardens or something? In fact, I did the herb garden in that book.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we have to recommend that now.
Oh,
good,
yes.
good. Question 5 is a fun one. That totally, there's no right or wrong answers, and it's two parts. Part one is, what's something that every novice gardener should try to grow next season? And part two is, is there anything that you would love to grow that you've never tried before?
I think the answer for both would actually be something you haven't grown before. And if you're new to gardening and you like tomatoes, and let's have the caveat here, not everybody likes tomatoes, but whether it be a tomatoes or peppers or strawberries, just grow something. Just get a container, grow something. If you've been gardening for a year or two, try something different, whether it be a new variety, a different sort of pepper. This year I tried some Asian vegetables. I wasn't very satisfied with it, so I'm going to try those again next year. And so some of these more oriental style veg idea, and we've got plenty of fences. So that's on the to-do list for next year too.
Hops, fantastic. My friend owns a microbrewery, and he has hops, and he treats them like his children. They grew like 20 feet tall. It's unbelievable. Filled his freezer with his harvest.
Yes.
Yeah, good for your husband. He'll enjoy that.
Oh, yes, and they like full sun. They can be a bit of a thug in the garden, but if you've got a trellis or an archway, stick them on that. I mean, you know, just give them strong support, and they are incredibly hardy, but they are just beautiful plants. So let them go, let them have somewhere to romp, and then enjoy them. But yes, there are, I'm told actually that there are so many microbreweries starting up now that there is beginning to be a bit of a crisis on hops. So that's another good reason to grow your own and try self-brewing it yourself.
Fantastic. Kate, you've been an amazing guest. Our time is whipping by. I want all the listeners, follow Kate on Twitter, at KATYCOPSEY. Go check out the websites, katesgardenjournal.com and katecopsey.com. I'm going to have all the links up at Back to My Garden, episode 72. Kate, I want to give you the last word today to our listeners. Can you leave us with either a pearl of wisdom or a note of encouragement?
I'm not sure I'm the one for wisdom. But I think that the most important thing about gardening that I've found, most plants, particularly perennials and that type of thing, they want to live. And no matter how you prune them or whatever, plants want to live. Now the annuals are a little bit different, but you know, if you don't like something, if you don't like chard or kale, don't grow it. You know, just because everybody's growing it, if you don't like eating it, don't grow it. You know, grow something you enjoy.
Absolutely brilliant. Kate, thank you so much for being on the show. We'll have to have you back next year.
Oh, you are more than welcome. I'd be happy to come back again.